Okay, thank you. The pleasure to be able to come and come all this way and talk about some of my work. So the title of this talk is An Assessment of Alternative Cotton Fibre Quality Attributes and Their Relationship with Yarn Strength. And I'd firstly like to start by acknowledging some of the co-contributors to this work: Michael Bange, Jeffrey Church and Greg Constable at the CSIRO, and also Chris Dellum at the USDA. So just covering the rationale and aims of the work. So knowing the yarn strength performance potential of cotton fibre is advantageous to spinners during laydown management and to researchers developing new genotypes and developing production practices to make better fibre. Arguably, yarn strength is probably the single most important yarn quality parameter. Stronger yarns means that knitters and weavers can produce fabric more efficiently with less stoppages. So in Australia, like here and everywhere else, our cotton is valued based on visual hand classing plus some standard HVO attributes, most notably length, bundle strength and micronair. And I've got there, for an example, micronair, we aim for the G5 range, 3.8 to 4.9 micronair. And like the other parameters, it's all about making these ranges to avoid discount penalties and very little to do with attracting premiums. I think you all know that. So this work is about looking at a small selection of important Australian genotypes that have come out of our breeding program. And we looked at these lines over a couple of field experiments. And the main aims of the work is to look at alternatives for micronair, fineness and maturity, so the traditional components, both via traditional measures as well as contemporary. And also we've taken the opportunity to have a look at the single fibre tensile properties of these varieties, and that's something that's quite novel for us. We've only recently been able to acquire a Fabimat robot and certainly been able to look at that and compare that with bundle testing is something that's important. We know that, you know, for all the reasons stated here today, that the bundle test is fast, it works well, it's pretty good, but issues like clamping of multiple fibres and associated slippage effects, length biases that Jeff has talked about, and other things like fibre alignment inconsistencies and variable strain of break are components of the bundle test that include a reasonably good or a potentially better measurement of the bundle components of the tensile components of fibre. So not only do we want to make those comparisons, but importantly try and relate them to yarn strength. So as replacements for micronair, I've just tried to summarise the instruments that are of interest from the Australian standpoint. So the instrument at the top there is the Shirley FMT, used over the last couple of decades, in particular by our breeding program, and we've analysed, well, that team has looked at tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of cotton fibre samples. It's fast and effective, it's pretty bulletproof, takes a decent sized sample, a 4 gram clean sample, and much to the disappointment of some, it doesn't seem to want to break, it keeps on going. Nonetheless, with the CSIRO in about the last 10 years has developed two technologies to try and independently look at the components of micronair. So that's the cotton scan to measure, it's a direct automation of the ASTM gravimetric method. And the other technology is the CIROMAT, so that's looking at the birefringent colours under polarised light of cotton snippets, and they relate quite well to the maturity of fibres. And just in the last year, both of those instruments have been combined together into the CottonScape instrument. Of course, the definitive reference method, or supposed reference method, is the cross-sectional method. So bundles of fibre are embedded in a methacrylate polymer, and thin sections are analysed by image analysis software, and we can directly determine perimeter and wall area and maturity. And as I said, you know, we've been able to now look at some of these varieties from a single fibre tensile standpoint, and the Fabimat robot is the most automated machine, and we can now look at several hundred fibres per sample. So a note on a slightly different or contemporary method of measuring fineness, and that's that measuring ribbon width or fibre or fibre diameter. It's probably the first researchers anywhere in the world, you know, measured width. You can do it very simply under a microscope with an eyepiece unit. But if you want to do it on more than about 10 fibres, all of a sudden it gets problematic and impractical. The premise here is that if you look at that electron micrograph, while the fibre on the left probably has a bigger perimeter than the one on the right, you could argue that they both have similar width dimensions or width architectural dimensions based on the fullness effects due to maturity. And we wonder how an effective ribbon width measurement might help us to understand how fibres pack together in a yarn and those sorts of things. So just recently in 2010, a Darwin reported a laboratory-based instrument, prototype instrument, and he took 10 of the 104 reference set, and this was based on laser diffraction, and measured the width of those fibres and got a reasonably good relationship, R.79, between the cross-sectionally determined perimeter, direct perimeter, and width. Certainly, back in the mid-1990s, the CSIRO developed the Soriland laser scan, which is it can assess a large number of fibres for width. It was developed for measuring the micron of wool in particular and other animal fibres. But we've been able to make good use of it for cotton recently, and we found a similar relationship between ribbon width as determined by it and the cross-sectionally determined perimeter. There's a couple of hundred of those instruments in circulation in the world at the moment, but I know of no classes or merchants or scientists that have seen any value in trying to measure fibre width. Importantly, the bottom graph there shows that we were able to, you know, quite easily take the full 104 set and look at the width of those, and we got a pretty good relationship, but we expected it not to be perfect because of these fullness effects. So the two experiments were looking at those small number or reasonably nice number of our both released commercial upland genotypes and some breeding material that's yet to be released, as well as our premium Cypema barbadense variety. And we produced 26 bales of cotton in total over two seasons, and that work was conducted at Narrabri in New South Wales, which is where the Australian Cotton Research Institute is located, where we do all our field research. And we assessed each of those bales for standard HPI attributes, as well as these potentially different alternative attributes. And then we took each of those bales and we took them through to full commercial spinning in our commercial research mill in Geelong in the south of Australia near Melbourne. And we made 12 yarns in total for each bale, ring spun card combed at three tex levels and at two levels of twist. And the parameter of interest that I can only report one is yarn strength. So whilst this fundamental or this simple genotype comparison work allowed us to make some fundamental comparisons between the different measures of fineness and maturity and tensile properties, I can't talk about all of them, but just for an example, for maturity ratio, we saw that there was statistically significant interaction between the method of measuring maturity ratio and variety for both experiments. For double compression maturity ratio determination, on average it was similar to the determination via the polarized light technique, whilst calculated maturity ratio, which was determined via the automated gravimetric technique and Micronair and Lord's equation, tended to be a little lower. The cross-sectional reference technique was somewhere in between. That said, it was very interesting looking at our premium Pima variety. We saw two interesting results, and that was for polarised light, it tended to underestimate maturity of Pima. And I know there's significant conjecture about how polarised light microscopy works, and some would say that it's significantly confounded by total wall area than relative wall area. And the easiest way to explain that is that the smaller perimeter of Pima to start with, regardless of its maturity, is making it look less mature than what it really is. The other thing that stood out for Pima was for the reference cross-section technique, it tended to look like to be at the higher end of the maturity in comparison to the other upland varieties. And from what I understand, less mature fibre, the image analysis software has difficulty in determining the perimeter of those flattened ribbons, and it tends to occlude those fibres from any analysis, and you can get some overestimation. So what the truth is, I'm not exactly sure, but we just thought, I wonder how, you know, what the repercussions of this are for looking at new small perimeter genotypes, particularly the upland genotypes. So we decided to take our yarn spinning parameters and our fibre quality parameters and put them all together in a simple multivariate scenario to compare the relative differences of these different alternative parameters. We only had a small number, really 26 bales of cotton, so we just took a simple multiple linear regression approach. We didn't really see any significant non-linearities between our yarn spinning parameters. Importantly, we developed models from our first season, and then we validated the models from the second season and vice versa. So that just shows, you can see the uplands and then the genotypes, the upland genotypes, and then you can see the Pima genotypes sitting out there. We didn't see any real negative leverage effects of Pima on the model, but the main take-home message is there that we see improvements in our standard error of prediction for our models when we replace, for example here, I've used ribbon width instead of micronair, and we only looked at variables that statistically contributed to the model. So just a quick summary of that work. Whilst the most useful statistic out of all those is probably the true difference between the actual and predictive values, so the standard error of prediction, we got reasonably good results using our standard variables. But as we would have thought, when we replace micronair for its traditional components, fineness and maturity as determined by FMT or gravimetric, and polarised or gravimetric and a calculated maturity number, we saw about a 20% improvement in model performance. For cross-sectional parameters, we saw good models, but interestingly enough, when we used ribbon width instead of micronair and all other variables being similar, but only including those that statistically contributed to models, we saw about a 30% increase in model improvement. And when we included single fibre strength and elongation for bundle strength and elongation, including micronair, we saw about a 40% increase in yarn strength prediction. We decided to just take the opportunity to dumb it down and look at a simpler approach, and that's via the use of a fibre quality index. There's been much talk about this. Someone today at the other conference was talking about Q indexes or something. And so Hunter in 2004, so reasonably recently, reviewed all the different fibre quality indices that have been published. And of those dozen presented there in his review, they're all really based on this one index, which is the ratio of a product of a measure of length and strength to a measure of fineness. So we took our 26 bales and we ranked them based on this standard FQI, and then we ranked those bales based on the FQI, but looking at replacements for micronair, so gravimetric FMT or cross-sectional or ribbon width fineness. And then we rank those bales on that index, but looking at single fibre strength instead of bundle strength. And then we simply looked at the correlation between FQI rankings, bale rankings in FQI, I'm sorry, and bale rankings based on actual yarn strength for each of the 12 yarns. So this slide really corroborates the regression work and is really a summary slide. So while, you know, micronair performed quite well from a bale ranking standpoint, as we expected when we used its traditional replacements for fineness, either gravimetric or double compression airflow, we got a marked improvement in bale strength rankings. Bale yarn strength rankings. Notably, ribbon width also worked well, and so did cross-sectionally determined perimeter, and when we use single fibre strength instead of bundle strength in that fibre quality index, it also did a good job at ranking bales. I'll leave it there, and I'd like to say thanks to our technicians at CSIRO, thanks to Dr. Erica Kay for providing the reference cottons in 2006, which we've made good use of. Thanks to Mary Raines at Texas Tech for undertaking cross-section analysis of our little group of genotypes. Thanks to Holly King at the USDA for single fibre tensile testing. A big thanks to Cottonseed Distributors, which is our seed company, for their financial and in-kind support, and also to Clyde Agriculture for providing their commercial gin for our use. And also I have to thank the Cotton Research and Development Corporation and the Cotton CRC for their financial support. Thank you.
Any questions?
Okay, this land. I see the Mekong has really a low holding coefficient R squared. But one of the reasons I think the Mekong impact on yarn is not linear. Not the highest bed or highest, it has a range, you know, like this. Mm-hmm. 3.7 to 4.5 is the best. So if you put that Mekong value in the linear regulation, it may not give you the best.
Yeah, I suppose from a practical classing standpoint, if you make that range, then it doesn't matter. But I suppose if you're trying to improve genotypes, you want to take a closer look, then Micronair doesn't really work that well. You're best to look at its components. That's what we've found. So.
Rob, on the same line, it's very nice water. The question I have is, when I looked at it, was you're assuming a linear relationship, and with Micronair, you may work with it quadratic, since that's what the basis of the Lord equation. I'm not saying going to, but I've seen dumber things happen with the Lord equation. It's unbelievably canny how well that thing works. The coefficients may change.
Well, it can't work. Sorry. So we okay.
Yeah, using the quadratic. If you're dealing with Micronair, going to quadratic, it's definitely a good place to stop.
So how would I apply that to that exercise there, using, as in the.
Well, I find a good mathematician like Jeff Baylor asking.
Yeah. Well, that's right. You know, we.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That's a little bit of a passive football there.
For the next 3 months.
Thank you, and thanks to all of our speakers. That concludes today's presentations. 8:30 tomorrow morning, same location, some of the same people. So.